Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the programme that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm very happy to have with me in the studio today Dr. Adrian Greemer. Dr. Greemer is a senior lecturer at the Department of Maltese here at the university. He specialises in metaphor and the presence of the Mediterranean in Maltese literature. He obtained his doctorate from the University of Malta under the supervision of Professor Joseph Buttigieg from the University of Notre Dame in Indiana, USA, and Professor Oliver Frigieri. He's spoken, of course, at numerous conferences and seminars about literature, and Maltese literature in particular, all around Europe and in America. In 1999, he published Itrumbetir, a book of poetry in Maltese with illustrations by Adrian Marmon Rafael Bella. And the translations on that occasion into English were by Professor Sergino Inglot, Peter Sergino Inglot. This collection won second prize in the Premio Tivoli Europa Giovani competition of the same year. Other works have been published in Algeria, France, Morocco, Cyprus and many other countries, and actually his poetry has been translated into at least 16 languages. Dr. Greemer is coordinator of the cultural organisation Initiamed, which was set up in 1998. Welcome to you, Dr. Greemer. Today we're going to talk about one of your latest research projects, about a certain Juan Marmo. He has been described, at least I saw him described, as the one of the best classical writers in Malta during the first half of the last century. Is this paean justified?
Absolutely. I think Marmo is one of the lesser known writers, even though, especially after Professor Oliver Frigieri published a very important book about Marmo in 1984, and SKS published the third edition of his novel in that same year. After that, sort of revival of interest in Juan Marmo, he has become more and more known within the academic community and even beyond the academic community, in the sense that people, common readers, people who enjoy reading, pick up his book in most bookstores and also in public libraries. I think there is now a second revival about Marmo, and it's mainly in the academic field. So there is a lot of interest in the way Marmo uses language, because ultimately a writer is judged by the way he or she uses language. So ultimately it's not whether Marmo writes about emigration or whether he uses dialect or whether he was a laborite or a Strickland supporter or an anti-establishment writer. The issue is, how does he use language? And this is what makes him extraordinary, because Marmo is a very self-conscious writer. He's completely, totally aware of the way he is using language. So he makes one parody after another of the so-called classical writers of his time, of the established writers of his time, including writers like Giuse Muscata Zopardi, for example, who is considered sort of the big father, not to say the big brother, of Maltese literature at the time, and was a very influential figure, Muscata Zopardi. But he's also very self-critical. He criticizes himself. He's very ironical, even when he talks about himself. He pulls his own legs, if I may say so. So this is what makes him very, very interesting. Of course, he does use dialect, and he also makes a lot of references which a sociologist or a scholar of political history or even a scholar of social history would find extremely interesting. The way he talks about celebration of feasts, the way he talks about culture in the countryside, the way he talks about You know, that's almost the subculture of people who work in the city. These are all really interesting points, but from a critical, literary criticism point of view, it's the way he uses language which makes Ma more interesting. And to close off this point, I would say that there was this controversy at one point. Some people were arguing in the not so distant past that Mamo's novel is full of very, very interesting strategies, narrative strategies, but ultimately it's a bit undisciplined. He seems to be really enjoying himself throughout the novel, but then somebody argued that he suddenly got tired of writing this novel and sort of abruptly ended the novel. And this has been shown to be completely untrue. The novel is very well structured. The ending is prepared practically from the second chapter. When you read the novel backwards, you realize that there's a very, very clear trajectory of the culprit, the main culprit in the novel, who's Gaëtan in the novel. And this trajectory, this plot is very well put together. And the ending is not at all an abrupt ending, but a, quote, logical or rather illogical conclusion to an illogical historical period, a historical situation.
Perhaps we can just put Marmo in a context, in a time frame, for those listeners who perhaps aren't so familiar with him.
Yes, Marmo was born on the 28th of September 1886. He died relatively young, in very mysterious circumstances. His body was found apparently more than a week after he had disappeared, not returned home. Some people have argued that it's quite strange that in such a small country where people know and knew each other so much, that somebody like Juan Marmo should be discovered, you know, so many days after he failed to return home. He was discovered in Widbabu in Zurich by somebody who wasn't actually looking for him. Actually, he was discovered by a farmer. His body was discovered by a farmer, and apparently he died because of a great fall, probably from the cliff. Some people have argued that He was examining plants. He was a hundred things. Mum was an incredibly erudite man, self-taught, but also a person who had this great thirst, insatiable thirst for knowledge, I would say. So some people say he may have fallen to his death while examining some plants at the edge of the cliffs. Others have more sinister interpretations to that fall. But whatever it is, he was discovered after a number of days. He died in 1941. He was found on the 28th of April 1941. Of course, we don't know exactly when. The day of his death. He had a very colorful life. He came from a very humble background in Khaloa, where he was brought up in a family where many of his siblings died at a very young age. It was only three who actually survived. Incidentally, Marmo and his wife Carmela Vella had seven children, three of whom survived. The others died at relatively young ages. So it was a very difficult period for the great majority of Maltese people at the time. He came from a poor background, and at a very young age, I think it was the age of 19, he ended up in prison. He was given a 20-year sentence because he shot a person who, it seems, had had some kind of relationship with a member of his family. So Mamov took it upon himself to react to that relationship, or perhaps he was behaving incorrectly. We don't know much. That's why my language here is very vague, because I don't want to insinuate anything at all. I just want to focus on the fact that Mamo took it upon himself, sort of took it to carry the honor of the family. He was meant to go to prison for 20 years. He actually spent just over 6 years in jail. Came out in 1912. And in 1914, he emigrated to Egypt, where there was a very large community of Maltese living in Cairo, Alexandria, and Port Said, mainly. Mamo spent most of his time in Alexandria. He got to know Manuel de Beck, who was also incidentally in prison for many years, but this was just before Mamo went to prison himself. They didn't actually meet in prison, they met outside prison. So Mamo got to know Bimek before he left Malta, in that short period between his release from jail and his decision to emigrate. And he sort of reunited with Dimek when Dimek was deported to Alexandria from Sicily in 1914. And he pretty much followed and continued meeting Dimek up until 1921, when Dimek died.
And in fact, this connection with Dimek is an interesting one. Interesting to compare their politics a bit, and also the way in which they wrote. If I've understood correctly, he actually received Dimek's personal belongings after he died. Amongst them, an important document of the aphorisms.
Yes, the relationship between Mamo and Dimek is the subject of a lot of research by Father Mark Montebello, who's done some really important work. I think Father Mark has interpreted Mamo's so-called abuse of his special connection with Dimek perhaps a bit too loosely. I would say that Mamo was much more faithful to Dimek than one may gather from what Father Mark has written. And recent documents found by Father Mark seem to confirm this. It is also true, however, that it seems that Mamo fabricated a story about being with Dimek when Dimek actually died. It seems that is not true, and I think Father Mark has argued this quite conclusively, I would say. And he also fabricated, apparently, Mamo, a visit to Dimek's purported place of burial. But I think this very much falls within the, can I say, the remit of the character, the frame of the character of Juan Mamo. This is a man who insisted on writing his name in a Spanish way. This is a man, so he wrote J-U-A-N, normally J-U-A-N-N. We're still unsure today whether to write J-U-A-N-N or J-U-A-N. I think what Mamo really wanted was J-U-A-N-N. So he was even breaking sort of the Spanish way of writing the name. He definitely didn't write Jewe Anen as in Maltese. That's definitely not his choice. And I think we need to respect him for this. And I suspect that this sort of Spanish choice of writing his name may have been influenced by the strong influence that Cervantes had on him as a writer. And Mamo himself acknowledges this influence of Cervantes in the introduction, in the preface to his novel.
In fact, the novel. We haven't actually mentioned the title yet. So, Ulit Inanna Venut Flamerica.
Yes, Grandma Venut's children in America. Grandma Venut is not a character in the novel. It's just a way that Mamo uses to refer to common people. Instead of saying, you know, common people emigrated or emigrating to America, he says Grandma Venut's children in America. We don't know much about the origin of this expression. I suspect that, as in so many other things, Mamo is lifting expressions, phrases, inspiration from common parlance, common language. But we don't know much about this. What we do know is that the novel is centers around this group of, well, in a way, anonymous characters. They're types rather than rounded characters of common people. And the only character who really stands out in a more or less rounded way is the character of Felice, who is the only one who decides to leave the group and actually stay in the U.S. in New York when the rest of the group decide to return to Malta after their completely disastrous venture as immigrants in the U.S., where they thought that money would be
lining the streets.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's an interesting to see that, in fact, he's pretty critical, really, of the Maltese group that went over. I mean, he's not very kind about them, is he, really, in his description of these characters?
I'm not sure this is the right word, but his description of the backwardness and the lack of schooling and the lack of hygiene, for example, and the superstitions of this group of people that he talks about, people like Armauz Arma, Bertu Armauz Arma, and so many other characters, is almost ruthless. He is ruthless with these characters. Perhaps it's not the right adjective to describe them, but he's definitely making a very clear point about the kind of backwardness that he sees as something that is keeping the Maltese population, especially common people, back and stopping them from being emancipated like many of the Europeans, especially the British, the French, and also the Americans, of course, that Mamo admired so much.
So he was criticizing the system from which these people were actually having to flee at the end of the day.
Absolutely. So the standard interpretation would be Mamo is criticizing his fellow country people, ultimately, because he wants to attack the system, the unjust system, a very local system, though, not a system that has much to do with colonization. We'll come back to this. That has created this strange creature, which is the Maltese person, the common Maltese person, with a severe lack of education, health, hygiene, etc. Unlike the Mek, Mamo is a pro-British, let's say, intellectual and writer. I mean, he very much agrees with Mamo when it comes to education and social issues, for example, the role of women, for example.
With the Mek.
With the Mek. He very much agrees with the Mek on these issues. And he uses language in a way which echoes what the Mek was doing with some of his language. Generally speaking, the Mek is a quite conservative writer in terms of the way he's using language. In terms of ideas, the Mek is perhaps a bit more transgressive in terms of how he sees society and the relationship that the Maltese have with the British colonizer. Mamo is pro-British, is great Europeanist, absolutely a Europeanist, but he feels that the root cause of injustice in Malta is not the presence of the British. That is, in fact, quite the contrary, a source of inspiration for the Maltese. The root cause is the local elite, il clicca, the local elite, a small group of powerful people who have, as Mamo would say, kept the great majority of the Maltese backward because it suits them, because it allows the small elite to continue to enjoy their privileges, and leave sort of the great majority of Maltese in the bliss of ignorance
and abject poverty.
Abject poverty
in certain areas.
Yes.
Was the church included in that elite?
Absolutely. The church is also, that's a common point with Manuel de Vec. They were both believers, but they were also both staunchly opposed to the Catholic establishment.
And he did write other things apart from the book for which he's most famous.
Yes. Mark Vella has collected his short stories, which were originally published in the papers, so they are addressing a particular audience in a particular context, and also they have a certain limitation of length. He also published a book called Jabrata Sigriti. This is a collection of experiments, tricks, based on science and magic and things like that, in a book called Jabrata Sigriti. These were also originally published in the papers, and he published a book called Obstetricia Illustrata about birth and what's happening in a woman's body when she becomes pregnant. This was condemned by the church. He couldn't distribute it. It was a very important book to educate people at a time when so many women were facing the hardships of too many conceptions, etc., etc. It was condemned mainly because it reproduced diagrams, illustrations of the woman's body. And of course, this is another indication of what Mamo so staunchly opposed in the power structures of Maltese society.
The travel side of things does actually fascinate me, because he went to France, he went to Tunis, he went to Italy, he went to England. Was that unusual for the time to be moving around like that with somebody from a village? And
yes, so many Maltese people were traveling at the time. Of course, thousands of people of Maltese people would normally a rather humble background had emigrated to countries within the Mediterranean, but also beyond. There was, of course, a lot of return migration, but so many Maltese were traveling. And Mamo himself in the novel talks about Andrea da Bono, who he describes as a great explorer. A book has been published in Malta about this man. Mamo says Andrea da Bono was with Livingstone, you know, exploring the heart of Africa, etc., etc. Mamo sees Paris as the heart of Europe, as the heart of civilization, but he also loves Britain. He spent months in London. He never himself went to America, even though he describes it as if he were there, but his uncle did. His uncle did visit. His father's brother, Giuseppe, was an immigrant in the U.S. and one of the many who returned. And of course, he must have heard tens of stories from so many Maltese immigrants, immigrants who had been to the U.S.
So, in a word, what do you feel that Juan Mamo has to say to us today, really? a role model for his actions, a brilliant writer. Where do you think his legacy really lies?
His legacy, I would say, lies mainly in the way he uses language, in the way he writes. So I think he's a great source of inspiration for any writer. For example, Bricuni literally referred to him as a source of inspiration. Giuseppe Stagno does the same. But so many other writers do, Trevor Zara and others, see Mamo as a great source of inspiration because of his transgressive, in a very positive sense, use of language. I think this is his great forte. And he is definitely a much more important literary figure than one would gather from the fact, for example, that he was left out of the first major anthology of Maltese prose writers, edited by Aquilina, called L'Antologia della Prosa Maltia. He was left out of that, as Professor Manuel Mifsud frequently observes. He was definitely a much more important, he is, I would say, definitely a much more important literary figure than many of those who are mentioned much more frequently than he is.
Well, it's a good thing that somebody's putting him back on the map where he should be. And we've run out of time. Dr. Adrian Grima, thank you very, very much for coming onto the studio today to talk to us about Juan Mamo.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.